Now back to Mad Dog Unleashed with Christopher Russo on SiriusXM's Mad Dog Sports Radio.
George Allen, A Football Life. Mike Richmond wrote a very, very good biography on George. I didn't know a lot. I know obviously something about it. I knew he was with the Rams and everything else. But you get a real good feel of this defensive-oriented coach, you know, from the late 60s to the late 70s in the NFL, with a tremendous winning percentage in the regular season, not so good in the postseason, which we'll get to. And Mike, who is a grew up a Redskins fan, did a tremendous job of chronicling his life. Mike, nice to talk. Sorry about the Zoom issue, but nice to have you with us here. Christopher Russo, good afternoon. How you doing, okay?
Great to be on, Chris. Thank you very much.
Good to have you with us.
Talking about George Allen.
There you go. What the heck? We should give him a little background, early part of his career. Grew up in Michigan, coached in some small colleges, went to Whittier, where Nixon went. He was a good friend of Nixon a little later on, but was there too. Got an opportunity with the Bears, but, kind of fell into football, loved it, and it began early there at some small schools in the Midwest. Let's start there first. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So it was actually his first coaching stint was with the University of Michigan. He got a break with Fritz Kreisler, who was the head coach at Michigan at the time. This was a 1947, and Kreisler told him, listen, hey, we're going to be part of a 150-pound new league consisting of four schools in the Midwest, and Michigan would be one of them. There was another head coach who had been tapped to coach that team, but Kreisler said to him, we want you as an assistant coach on that team. So that was actually Allen's first head coaching gig, true head coaching gig of any kind. And from there, he rode away to like 800 different schools around the country, one of which that responded was Morningside in Iowa. So that was his first head coaching gig in college. He had a plus 500 record there. And from there, he went to Whittier, where he coached from like 51 through 56, and which is where actually he met Nixon. But it wasn't, and as you mentioned, Nixon being a graduate of Whittier, they met in an NCAA banquet in the early 50s. That's how they first got to know each other. And then later on, everybody thinks they intersected first in the nation's capital, which is not really true. They first met at Whittier. So that was how that whole story started. So then Allen coached there through the 56 season. He was actually out of coaching for a little bit until the Chicago Bears gave him an opportunity. Hallis Hine signed him as a head talent scout, starting in the 59 season. And then when Clark Shaughnessy stepped down as defensive coordinator during the 62 season, that's how Allen got that role. So at the same time, he was head talent scout and defensive coordinator of that Chicago Bears team. And then he really came to fame when that 63 Bears team won the NFL championship. And Allen built that squad. I mean, you ask any living player from that team today. I was able to interview Ed Obradovich about it. He says Allen was responsible for that championship win. There's no doubt about it. We have to totally credit George Allen. It was not George Hallis. And it was Allen after the game who was, players were singing, hooray for George. He's a horse's ass. They were singing that after the game for George Allen, not George Hallis.
Right.
He got a game ball, too.
Yeah, sort of like Buddy Ryan with Ditka. George was sort of had a love-hate relationship with Hallis. He has to give Hallis credit because Hallis gave him a chance, but Hallis was a tough son of a gun. And, you get the idea when you get to his Chicago days, Mike, that Hallis, sort of was a little jealous of all the success George had and his relationship with his defensive guys. I think there was a little jealousy there. What's your take?
Absolutely. There is no doubt about that. Hallis was very jealous of him. And actually, starting from around the time that I just explained, that 63 championship season where Allen was getting all the accolades and Hallis didn't like it. So then after the 65 season, Allen wanted to be a head coach. I mean, he was like around his mid-40s at the time. So he wanted a head coaching opportunity. And he had already had several offers from teams that he had turned down. But a opportunity came up with the Los Angeles Rams. And Allen actually, he accepted that role, that offer, but Hallis didn't like it. And that's when Hallis challenged him and took him to court. He said, George Allen, you're in breach of contract. You cannot sign with the Los Angeles Rams at this time because you have proprietary information from the Chicago Bears that you're going to share with them. So Hollis took him to court. But it was really, you know, Hollis, he was acting like a, you know, a petulant child, you know, just he was trying to make a point. You know, he was jealous of George Allen, and he gave him a really hard time. But then later on, you know, you mentioned Buddy Ryan. Then, you know, when Hollis hired Ditka after, I believe, starting 82 season, well, Allen was actually interested in that job, but Hollis would have none of it. He did not want George Allen back at all, and he was holding a grudge toward him from what happened in the mid-60s. But you're right. Hollis was very jealous of George Allen and all the attention he was getting.
100%. And, you know, I think George would have liked the Bear job, but who the heck knows when, in fact, he was going to retire. So that caused problems, too. And that 63 team, of course, was a great defensive team that beat the Giants 14-10 in the Super Bowl, in the NFL championship that day. And Hollis was obviously the defensive coordinator. Goes to the Rams, a team that, you know, had really misfired in the last 7 or 8 years previous. They had those heydays in the mid-50s, and they were bad. Tommy Prothrow and company. But the one thing, and Harlan Savar and everything else, but the one thing about the Rams, they had plenty of talent. I mean, you know, they had obviously Deacon Jones, Merlin Olsen was there. They had plenty of talent. It's almost like Green Bay with Lombardi. When he got there, they had plenty of talent that he groomed. A little of that same thing with George when he got to L.A. That team was ready to win with the right coach. What's your take on the mid-60s Rams when George got there? Go ahead.
That's absolutely right. There was a lot of talent on that team, but they needed a leader. I mean, they were kind of rudderless in terms of like Deacon Jones, for instance. I mean, he had really bad coaching his first few years in the league. I mean, and he was quoted as saying that many times over the years. But when George Allen got there, Allen taught him how to be a great rusher. You know, he just let him fly, let him go after the quarterback. And we all know what happened with Deacon Jones and sacks in the mid to late 60s. And, I mean, Allen just let him go. And, of course, Merlin Olsen, Ed Metter, Maxie Bond, Jack Pardee, he had a great defense and when he came on board. And they finished 8-6 in 1966. Oh, also, I should say, Allen had Roman Gabriel. It had been back and forth with Gabriel as the starter his first few years in the league, but Allen tapped him as the starting quarterback. And Gabriel, at that time, 66 was a very good year. Then the 67 season was Gabriel's best season in the NFL to that point. I mean, he had, like, close to MVP numbers. He actually was MVP of the league in 1969. And I actually made a point in the book that if Allen had a quarterback like Roman Gabriel – when he coached the Redskins in the 70s, that Redskins team would have done a lot more in the postseason. You know, you mentioned it earlier. I mean, Allen didn't do much in the postseason except losing the Super Bowl VII to the Dolphins in the 72 season. But if he had had a quarterback like Roman Gabriel, who was in his heyday with those Rams teams, those Redskins would have done a lot better in the 70s. But, yeah, absolutely. Allen turned those Rams teams around. 67 was a great year. 69 was a great year. He took them to the playoffs both times. They lost in the first round, unfortunately. And back in those days, the league was rotating season by season in terms of where you played your first round playoff game. So
right.
Both years, the Rams had to go on the road and play. But the first time they went on the road, they had a better record.
Oh, they were 11-1. I mean, they were 11-1, whatever, and they had to go play in Green Bay, who was 9-4.
Right.
So that was a major problem.
Exactly.
A major problem.
No, absolutely. They had 11-1-2 that year. The Packers were like 9-4, but they had to go on the road and play in Green Bay. I'm not, you know, it'd be like crying sour grapes today to say that, hey, you know, that's why they lost. I think they lost in the first round that year because they had two huge emotional games to end that 67 regular season. They beat the Packers in the next to last regular season game when on that block punt by Tony Guillory.
Famous game.
And then, Right. Oh, it was an amazing game. And then they beat the Baltimore Colts in the last regular season game that year. And just to illustrate the competitiveness of the NFL at that time, that Colts team also finished 11-1-2 that year. And they didn't even go to the playoffs.
Correct. They went 1-0-1 against the Colts. They tied him in Baltimore and beat him at home last game of the year, and that's why they won that division, 100%.
Right, the Coastal division. And it so happened that the Colts and the Rams were in the same division at the time. Yeah, so that Colts team, that was a mighty Colts offense and defense, both sides of the ball. They didn't even go to the playoffs. I mean, that would be unthinkable today with seven teams. Seven teams per conference going to the playoffs. So.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's funny. He had a difficult relationship with his owners. Bennett Williams in Washington, which we'll get to with Mike Richmond on George Allen, Football Life, excellent biography on Allen. And then, of course, issues with Dan Reeves, who was, you know, brought the Rams to L.A. from Cleveland in the mid-40s. Now, Reed wasn't easy. Edward Bennett Williams wasn't easy. But George did not have a good relationship with either of the two owners, and it began. And then, of course, you throw Hallison, who was the owner of the Bears. So, I mean, that is a characteristic of him with his three jobs. Let's get to that for a sec. Let me hear.
Right. Exactly. That was a pattern of George Allen throughout his coaching career. Well, first he had the antagonistic relationship with Reeves. You know, talking about jealousy, Reeves became jealous of him too because of all the success that Allen was having in L.A. And it was overshadowing what, you know, Reeves wasn't getting any of the attention. It was all going to Allen. So after the 68 season, for some unthinkable reason, I mean, you had Allen coming off 11-1-2 in 67, 10-3-1 in 68. Reeves fired him after the 68 season. He fired him the day after Christmas, and as Allen would title one of his books in later years, you know, Merry Christmas, you're fired. So, but then in one of the surreal moments in George Allen's life, Allen called for a press conference at one of the L.A. hotels, and he wanted to explain his point, like saying he wanted that Rams job back. Well, about 20 of his veteran Ram players showed up at that press conference. And, you know, Allen wearing sunglasses, you know, he was still teary-eyed, and he wanted that job back. And his players spoke up for him. Romer Gabriel, Deacon Jones, Merlin Olsen, all those guys, Pardee, they spoke up for him. They said, listen, Dan Reeves, if you don't rehire George Allen, we're not coming back. So that, I'm sure that sent a very strong message to Reeves. And also, Allen was friends with the Rams team doctor, who also was very close with Reeves. And this doctor, he kind of negotiated a settlement between those two, got them talking again. Reeves eventually rehired Allen. Then Allen, he was almost a lame duck coach at that time, because unless he won the Super Bowl in his last 2 years of his five-year contract, Reeves wasn't going to hire him back. So Reeves fired him again after the 70 season. And then Edward Bennett Williams led the charge. Also, Jack Kent Cook was in on it too.
That's true. He was
good friends with Jack Kent Cook, who at the time owned the Lakers and Kings, and Allen knew from L.A. But the two brought him to D.C. They gave him a really nice contract, 7-year deal, $125,000 a year. And but with Williams, there was another adversarial relationship that Allen had. Williams in particular did not like all the spending. You know, the big bucks that Allen was paying out to the veteran players. It's actually another reason that Reeves didn't like him, because Allen did have the authority to make the trades and to negotiate their contract at the same time in L.A. Reeves had control of the draft. But in Washington, Allen had control of everything, the, you know, trades, draft, and all that stuff. So he was bringing in all these high-priced, aging veteran players, and Williams didn't like it. You know, he said at one point, hey, George, you know, we're losing money. And he told him to get rid of a number of those players, Maxie Bond being one. And in fact, he told him after this, Reeves wrote him in a note. I found this at the George Allen archives in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Reeves wrote him after the 74 season saying, listen, you cannot keep both Sonny Jurgensen and Billy Kilmer on the team at the same time. It's costing us too much. Jurgensen made $180,000 in 1974, which was a lot of money at the time. Kilmer made $125,000. And also in the same note, Williams said, listen, I want you to elevate Joe Theismann to a starting role. I think Joe Theismann is going to be a really good quarterback. And it so happened that Allen wouldn't do that, but he retained Theismann on the team. But that's how he ended up cutting Sonny Jurgensen. Like, there's been a narrative that's gone around over the years. A story has been told that Allen single-handedly forced Sonny Jurgensen out. It wasn't really like that. And I explained that completely in the book.
Well, the good quote you have in here with Mike Richmond here on George Allen was on by Art Modell about his ownership relationships. The problem with George is a lack of understanding of the prerogatives of ownership and the need to run an organization with financial discipline. It's always a divided camp in his organization. He'll win more than his share of games and win brilliantly, but at a price. alienating players from owners. There's always been a problem with him, and it's not just trading draft choices he didn't have, because that's been done before. It's just that he creates an adversarial relationship with ownership, and that is not good. That was his down. That was his downfall. Word gets around. I thought that was a tremendous quote that you found from 1982 about Modell. So although Allen is in the Hall of Fame, has an incredible regular season record, the fact that he only coached in the NFL as a head coach for what, 12, 13 years, for a guy who loved and slept and was 24/7 football and had some problems with these teams, I think Art says it perfectly right there about working with George. It wasn't easy. How about that for a second?
No, it wasn't.
Go ahead.
He alienated the owners. And in fact, Modell said it, you know, perfectly, really. It was like players versus management when Allen coached those teams. And that's the way it was in L.A. That's the way it was in Washington. And after the 78 season, when Carol Rosenblum at the Rams fired him after two exhibition games, the owners just said, hey, you know, we don't want to put up with this. George Allen, to us, I mean, it's like a cancer. We don't want to bring him in and possibly suffer in these same circumstances. And also, Allen, if he were to be rehired in the NFL at some point, he wanted both coach and general manager duties. And as you know, at the time, that's when the NFL was starting to segue toward dividing those responsibilities, dividing it between coach and general manager. In fact, after the 77 season, that's when Williams hired Bobby Bethard.
Yep.
Right, and Jack Pardee is head coach. So that's when the league started moving in that direction. Now, it seems that it could be coming back a little bit in the other direction in recent years, but that's how that league was heading at the time. So the owners really didn't want to put up with that either. They would not grant him those general manager responsibilities, which he wanted. But that's exactly what it was. I mean, he just alienated those owners. He created that atmosphere. It was like a you know, this belligerent type atmosphere, players against management, you know, negotiating contracts that, you know, were too lucrative. The owners didn't like it. So, yeah, Allen never had a chance to coach again in the NFL. I mean, in that way, he was blackballed from the NFL. I mean, I don't think there was any coordinated meeting among the owners to say, hey, you know, we're never going to hire George Allen again. But I mean, they just never brought him back to be a head coach in the NFL. But yeah, he did have those two head coaching years in the USFL. And again, he was very, very successful.
Now back to Mad Dog Unleashed with Christopher Russo on SiriusXM's Mad Dog Sports Radio.
George Allen, a football life. Mike Richmond, George in the Hall of Fame, passed away, you know, and he had a heart attack, and he was a wonderful athlete. He ran constantly, marathons, kept himself in incredible shape, and passed away of a heart attack, and he was not that old, early 70s. We'll get to that a little later with Mike Richmond, who did this wonderful job on this great book. All right, Mike, let's do the trading for the veterans. He did not like to play young players. He loved the older players, and everywhere he went, he traded for them, even with draft picks, as Modell alluded to, that he didn't have. And he got in trouble for that with Roselle in the NFL, but he loved the older guy. How come? Let me hear.
Yeah, he felt it was that immediacy to win. He wanted the older guys. He wanted them for their being savvy and understanding the game better than rookies. He just didn't trust just rookie players, so he would go after these older players. And it was because of an immediacy to win. That's what he felt at the time. When he first became a head coach of Los Angeles Rams in 1966, that's when I think the pressure was starting to build a little bit on the head coaches more. You know, it wasn't like it is today. You know, two seasons and you're out. I don't think necessarily, but he really felt that was the fastest way he could win ball games. Now, actually, one of the very interesting things that I uncovered in the book, and I really expounded on this, is that while Allen loved veteran players as a head coach, he had a very keen eye for young talent. When he was the head talent scout of the Chicago Bears, he brought in some very important players that they played pivotal roles on that 63 team. Mike Ditka being one, future Hall of Famers, Mike Ditka, Ronnie Bull, running back. And then the 65 draft, he drafted Sayers and Butkus in the first round, back-to-back picks, which has to go down as one of the greatest drafts in NFL history.
Absolutely.
Right. In addition to those guys, he drafted Steve DeLong, an offensive lineman with the number 8 pick. And DeLong, he ended up going to play in the AFL. He was a one-time Pro Bowler. And then a running back named Jim Nance.
Very good
in the later
player.
Rounds, I think in the fourth round, he went to play in the AFL too.
Yep, very good. So he had an affinity for the younger player, but he used all his draft picks to get the older guy because he wanted them in immediately. Is that the reason?
He wanted to win immediately. That's the way he felt he would do it. And he just did not trust younger players, which is really, it's kind of a paradox to what he was doing in Chicago. I mean, he had such a keen eye for that young talent. He brought in players who played those really important roles on that Bears team. But yeah, when he got to be a head coach in the NFL, it was just those veteran players. And actually that's one of the things that angered the owners, as we were talking about before, because he was paying these guys big bucks and a lot of them were not doing anything on the field. I mean, they were just, two games a year and that's it. And he was paying them a lot of money. So yeah, that was it with the veteran players.
Yeah, problem there too. The other thing that Olsen brought up, and you had a good quote from him, is George sometimes was a little too rah-rah. And, he wanted you to play in week 3 against the Saints. He kind of he treated the same as week 15 against the Colts. And he said that can wear you out as a player. And Olsen speculated that that may have been one of the reasons why the team kind of ran out of gas, Allen teams did, in postseason play. What's your theory on that, Mike? Let me hear.
That is absolutely. That's a valid point. I mean, Olsen was not the only player to say that over the years. Allen would treat every game with this like high school atmosphere. It was this rah-rah, 3 cheers for the Reds. Because, he sang that song in the locker room after the game many times. And, and the players just got worn out. I mean, you're dealing with grown men. And just, all of the emotions that he was trying to instill in them pregame and so forth, it just got to them. He would treat every game, like it was the most critical game of their careers. And so it did wear a lot of them out. I mean, yeah, that is a very valid point by Merlin Olsen.
All right, how about offense? I think that's interesting, too. You mentioned Jurgensen. He may have been past his prime at the time. One year he hurt his foot. But he liked to have those quarterbacks who, quote-unquote, were game managers. He wasn't into having those quarterbacks who were going to make or break a team. He was more into the Kilmer types who was going to, protect the football, not do anything crazy, moderate his statistics, and let his defense and special teams win games. And that can work for a while, but in a big game, you need the QB to make some plays occasionally to win the football game. And George didn't necessarily believe in that, Mike. What's your take with that? Let me hear.
No, he didn't want the quarterback in the game that was going to air it out all the time, which was basically Sonny Jurgensen. I mean, you remember Jurgensen from those great aerial days in the 1960s and those explosive offenses. Allen didn't want any of that. Okay. And I should say, though, when Allen came to Washington in 1971, he was excited to have Sonny Jurgensen as his quarterback. But then when Jurgensen got injured in that 71 preseason and Allen had already traded for Billy Kilmer, he saw what Kilmer could bring to the team and how he was more of that game manager. And Allen, they just really developed this chemistry together. He and Kilmer, and he loved the fact that Kilmer was that game manager. And Jurgensen, when he got on the field, I mean, Allen and Jurgensen had this adversarial relationship too. I mean, Allen didn't like the fact that when Jurgensen was out there, he was freelancing. He wasn't following the plays. He would do what he wanted out there. That really angered Allen. He did not appreciate that at all. He wanted Kilmer. He just really, really loved Billy Kilmer. Kilmer was not the most talented quarterback. He threw those, self-identified wobbly passes. But Allen just really admired the guy. And Kilmer was a fighter, too. He would battle out there. And I think, a lot of the players really rallied around him more so than they did around Jurgensen. And I'm talking about the players from the 70s, from the Allen teams in the 70s, because Kilmer had that fighting spirit about him. And I know that George Allen admired that a whole lot too. And Allen even joked that when he got to the USFL, he was thinking of trading for Billy Kilmer for one of his USFL
teams. Yeah, he loved
it. Kilmer was long retired at the time. He retired after the 78 season.
I know he loves Kilmer. The postseason record, I think he was 2-7, somewhere in that area. His postseason record, when you examine it, was it a case that his team had bad losses, or was it a case that the teams they just lost to were better? Which one is it?
I think it's a combination. I think, first of all, as I mentioned earlier, I think that 67 team was probably his best overall team. That team should have beaten the Green Bay Packers, but Lombardi outboxed them in that game. And then there was also that emotional letdown from those two, the last two regular season games. 69 team was great. They lost. They nearly beat the Vikings, and that was a great Vikings team that went on to the Super Bowl that year. They nearly beat the Vikings in that game. They went. Rams had to play that game on the road. But in the 70s, and I really made a dive into this topic with the Redskins, that Allen did not have the greatest teams with the Redskins, except for that his 72 team was the best team, the team that went to Super Bowl VII. But otherwise, they were just a good team. They were not, you know, they were not an elite team at the time. He did not have that elite quarterback, and he had aging players also. So, and also after the 72 season, they had to play three playoff games on the road, and they got beat soundly each time. So, so it was a combination of both.
I did not see. I'd have to go back and watch the game again, and I'm sure you did. And I know that Dolphin team didn't lose, so we keep that in mind. Now, they had an easy schedule, so a lot of people didn't realize how good they may have been. And they almost lost to Cleveland in the first round, and Pittsburgh had them in big trouble in the championship game, so I get that. If you go back and look at that game, and I'm sure you did, Mike, in Super Bowl VII against the Dolphins, their first title for Shula, did Allen screw up? They lost 14-7. Did Allen screw up the game? Was he too conservative? Not take chances? If you examine that Super Bowl, as we all do with coaches today, when they lose, we break it down like you wouldn't believe. If you break down that game, why did the Redskins lose? And they were favored. Why did the Redskins lose?
Right. They were favored exactly for the reason that they dominated in the playoffs that year. And like you said, the Dolphins struggled. But I remember interviewing Terry Hermling about this. He worked them too hard in the 2 weeks prior to that Super Bowl. And as Hermeling described it, and even the first week when they were in D.C., he worked them really hard that week. And then, of course, he was all over them when they were in L.A. He wouldn't let them go, you know, just hang out on the town or whatever. They wanted to get out a little bit and enjoy
it.
Enjoy it, sort of
like Vermeulen 80 in New Orleans, the same kind of thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. Yeah, so he wouldn't let them get out. So they were tight heading into Super Bowl VII. They showed it on the field. They were flat. But at the same time, they were stricken with bad luck in that game. I mean, one of Billy Kilmer's passes, and Jerry Smith was wide open in the end zone.
He hit the goalpost, right? He hit the goalpost.
Goalpost, yeah. Jerry Smith was wide open at the time. The goalpost won the goal line. Another incident, Charlie Taylor was open, heading into the end zone. The pass was coming, and he tripped right as he was getting into the end zone. So there was just a bunch of bad luck that game. There's also the sequence where the Dolphins could have taken, Warfield caught like a 40, 50-yard touchdown pass that was called back because of a penalty. But so that negated a touchdown by the Dolphins. The Dolphins, you know, pretty much had that game in control except for the end. And, of course, when you premium made that foolish play at the end, which kept the Redskins in it. So for those combination of reasons, I'd say that, you know, that's why the Redskins dropped that game. It was certainly a winnable game. I don't think the Dolphins played a great game in any way. Like I said, that one touchdown was called back, but that game was winnable by the Redskins. But for those very reasons, they came in flat and they just couldn't recover from it. And because of all that bad luck, I don't think it was necessarily bad coaching. I don't remember being bad coaching in any way in that game by Allen. Nothing that I really dissected like that.
Yeah, just he overworked him a little bit going into the game, which is interesting. Did George, you know, he bounced around in that USFL, then he retired kind of suddenly. Did George have a happy life? I mean, he was 24/7. This is all he did. His kids are good kids. He had a happy marriage, but with the, you know, the way it ended, was George bitter the way it ended there in the early 80s with the USFL team? And he was obviously not the same kind of league as the National Football League. What's your take with that? Let me hear.
I don't think he was bitter in any way. I mean, I think he just felt a little burned out after the 84 season. First of all, they had gone to the championship game in the USFL that year, so he had an amazing season. It was pretty much a postseason run. They were 10-8 in the regular season, and then they beat Jim Kelly's Houston Gamblers in the first round. And then in the second round, they beat the Los Angeles Express. And that got them into the championship game that year. But I don't think it was anything that any reason that Allen was bitter in any way. I think that he was kind of burned out. He wanted to step down after the 84 season. And I think he also felt that the USFL was coming apart a little bit, that the owners had expanded too much after the first season, 83. And he was not a proponent of that. He did not want expansion. He wanted the league to grow the way it was in 83. I mean, they had a decent season, establishing themselves as a really good league, but they tried to grow. They expanded by a few teams for the 84 season. And it was also that season that Allen coached in Arizona. He coached Chicago Blitz in 83, and then this crazy move, they swapped franchises, and he became the coach in Arizona. But yeah, no, he wasn't bitter in any way, but he was getting antsy when he was out of coaching through the 1980s. You know, he worked for Ronald Reagan in the Reagan administration. He was president of the chairman of the President's Council on Physical Fitness through the 80s. But he wanted to get back into coaching, and he met people like Dabney Coleman, the actor, who
they loved him. They had a great relationship, the two of them. They loved each other.
Oh yeah, yes. They built a friendship, and Coleman actually influenced him to get back into coaching. He said, you know, he could hear in his voice when they had their conversations, you know, he really, really missed it. You know, his family thought he was crazy. I mean, his wife and even his kids, Bruce Allen and George Allen. I mean, they were shocked in particular when he took the coaching job at Long Beach State. One of the worst college coaching jobs.
He did a good job there, and he did a good job there at Long Beach State. He really did. Go ahead.
Yeah, they had a winning season in 1990. They finished 6-5. It was their first winning season since the 1985 season. And but also he taught them. You know, this was one of his goals. He wanted those players to mature. He wanted them to be like men. You know, he told them to dress in suits, and he wanted all of them, you know, have pretty much short hair. He wanted that in them. He wanted them to be professional in a way, not only on the field, but in how they carried themselves. So, and he said, you know, this is going to go down on your resume, the way you act, the way you carry yourself, and also having a winning team on the field. It's all going to be part of your resume when you present yourself for a job. So in fact, they ended up finishing 6-5. It was a winning season. It was a great year for George Allen and Long Beach State. Unfortunately, as the story goes, you know, being doused with the Gatorade or water shower after the final regular season game, which assured the winning season.
He got sick, and he never got better. It's
he
weird.
He never recovered from it, no.
Never recovered.
But, you know, actually, Jennifer Allen told me something very interesting. It wasn't necessarily the Gatorade shower. It was that, in her mind, the fact that her father had been diagnosed with AFib about a year before, and he never did anything about it. So it was probably like a combination of things, you know, having the Gatorade shower, you know, having symptoms that he never recovered from. And then it was exacerbated probably by the fact that he had AFib, and he was never treated for it in any way. So it just, you know, he had that heart attack in his house in Palos Verdes Estates.
Terrible, terrible ending, and a great coach. Interesting guy. He did a great job here, Mike. Thank you for the help. Sell a million of them. Appreciate you coming on this afternoon. Really do.
Thank you very much, Chris. You know, you really did your homework. You asked great questions, and thank you very much for having me on.
You got it. The George Allen book, interesting. I tell you, the Ram aspects of it are excellent. You'd enjoy this if you love the football. Ernie talked about this a couple weeks ago.